We're exploring children's audiobooks here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Audiobooks are readings of books that are recorded and shared on lots of different platforms. Think CDs, iTunes, subscription services, apps. So many choices out there, but what to pick? Recently, there have been a bunch of children's book awards announced, and the Odyssey Award honors the best in audiobooks produced for children and young adults. Do you turn up an audiobook when you're in the car or on a road trip? What's your favorite children's audiobook? Are you trying to pair an audiobook to your child's interests? What suggestions would you like? We're at 800-642-1234. Robin Witten is founder and editor of Audiophile Magazine. It's a resource for reviews and audiobook recommendations. Her podcast is called Behind the Mic with Audiophile Magazine, and she's brought us a curated shortlist of children's and YA audiobooks. Robin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Yes, good morning, Kate.
How popular would you say children's audiobooks are right now?
Well, they are very popular. They have been for a while, but I think they're gaining interest from families more and more all the time.
Well, certainly as families grapple with screen time and trying to take eyes off of screens, I think audiobooks perhaps might capture a particular market there to get those eyeballs off of screens.
Oh, I think so. There, you know, the magic of storytelling is very long-standing, and it still works.
You have been reviewing audiobooks for decades. How much have they evolved over the years?
Well, they have evolved in some ways, and in some ways, not so much. When you think about radio drama that was, you know, decades ago, families might have listened to. Now we have a real interest in full cast or ensemble cast recordings with many voices and lots of narrators taking the roles of the characters.
And layers upon layers of sounds, too. There was a symphony orchestra that composed sounds for an audiobook recently.
Yes, that's some of the original work that is being brought into audiobooks is very exciting.
Research shows audiobooks can also help a child develop better literacy skills. Make that connection for us. How does listening to a book this way promote literacy?
Well, there are several ways. I think one of the clearest way is with vocabulary and understanding story in the story's context, words that might not be familiar to a text reader. You know, you're listening to a story, so you have the whole context of it, and then that word becomes familiar. That's one of the really great things about audiobooks. Another is sustaining a longer attention to a story because you're engaged in the narrative. You know, someone is telling you something that could be very exciting, so you're going to stay with it while you hear how it comes out. And I think sometimes, especially young people who may, you know, their skill at reading may not be up to their interest level.
And you
so
also
audiobooks makes a big difference.
Yeah, you also hear that fluency of reading, of being able to just hear the fluency of the language, and that can be really beautiful.
Absolutely, and of course, anything with any accents or dialect, it colors the story so richly. It's really what the authors intend, and when you have that, it's very clear to a listener, and especially to young listeners who might not, you know, have the experience to create those voices in their head.
Talking with Robin Witten, she's founder and editor of Audiophile Magazine, which reviews 50 audiobooks a week, and she's brought us a short list for best children's audiobooks. Do you have a favorite children's audiobook? What is it? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. So, Robin, last week some of the best audiobooks produced for children and young adults were recognized by this Odyssey Award. What is this award?
Well, the Odyssey Award is one of the American Library Association Awards, Youth Media Awards, and the Odyssey is specifically for a brilliant audiobook.
Right up your alley.
It absolutely is, and so much attention is paid to the production of the audiobook, the care that went into it, whether it's the casting, the sound, and of course, its impact as an audio experience.
So, how does the Library Association decide which audiobooks win?
Well, the ALA has a process of librarians who listen, in the case of the Odyssey, to pretty much dozens and dozens of audiobooks, and then there's a process of elimination and discussion. So it's multi-stepped, and many points of view come into play, and it's a very rich process.
So its top award this year goes to the audiobook called Hey Kiddo, How I Lost My Mother, Found My Father, and Dealt with Family Addiction. This is by Jarrett Krzaksa. What is this book memoir about?
Well, it originated as a graphic novel or graphic memoir, and then has been adapted into the audiobook, Hey Kiddo. And what is exciting about Jarrett's story of his growing up is that in the audiobook, not only is the author has a role, he's telling the story, but his family and his actual friends and his teachers and some of the people that he knew growing up, his sisters, also have a voice in this story.
Wow. Let's hear a moment from it.
Worcester, Massachusetts. Hope Cemetery. It's where my grandfather is teaching me how to drive. I got my learner's permit the day I turned 16. And in a few months, I'll be up for my full license. Assuming I get enough learning hours in.
Come on, get behind the wheel.
I just love that moment because it is so real.
Absolutely. And, you talked a minute about the soundscape. So, you're in, a quiet place where there are going to be no other cars. It's safe to take a fast curve.
It's not often you hear of a children's book touching on addiction. Why do you think this book is important for kids to understand, especially now?
Well, I think there are lots of aspects in this story where Jarrett is raised by his grandparents, and his mother is part of the time in jail. She's in rehab, and it takes many layers of understanding to deal with this kind of a life, which he presents very well. And then there's also the part of he never meets his father until he's almost 18 years old.
We're talking about memorable audiobooks for kids and young adults with Robin Witten as our guide. She's founder and editor of Audiophile magazine. Do you have a children's audiobook you're following now? What is it? Why is it compelling? What's your favorite audiobook you've shared with a young person? What do you love about it? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with Robin Witten in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're on an audiobook expedition here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kahn. Thanks for being here. It takes time to sort through the thousands upon thousands of titles. Audio content has exploded in recent years. Numbers bear that out. Audible.com is a dominant force in audiobooks, and it's seeing increased interest in kids' content. Last year, the company said Audible listeners downloaded 40% more kids' content than they had in 2018. So parents, do you have a bedtime ritual involving audiobooks? Do you turn on audiobooks while making dinner or on road trips? How do you listen with kids? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Audiophile Magazine's founder and editor Robin Witten stays with us. So, Robin, Richard from Loganville called in, but he couldn't stay with us. And Richard wants to know if there are audiobook packages for children who have trouble reading to be able to follow along while listening to the book.
Oh, absolutely. There are. There are some great combinations of recordings and usually picture books. And of course, you know, we're talking about graphic novels. So that's an interesting combination for older children. A lot of the picture book read-alongs or listen-alongs are for the younger children. But absolutely.
What goes into creating an audiobook version of a graphic novel?
Well, obviously, it's a little hard to get your head around how this is done, but Jared Krzyzewska, who wrote the Hey Kiddo, talks about that process and trying to figure out when there would be no images, what needed to be added, whether it was sound. We heard a little sound in that clip. Whether it needed to, I mean, obviously the accents of all the family, very, very prominent within the listening experience, isn't something that you might get out of the graphic novel memoir. And so it has to be written like a script.
Let's look at the next audiobook on your list. It's won lots of awards, most recently the 2020 Newbery Medal, which recognizes the most outstanding contribution to children's literature. It's called New Kid by Jerry Craft. What makes this audiobook special?
Well, this is interesting because this is the Newbery Award is for not for an audiobook, but a printed book, and this is a graphic novel by Jerry Craft. A story about a young boy who is going to a new school. And he's black. It's mostly white students at the school, and he has to take a long ride to get there. And he has really a long ride in the transition to fit in to the new school.
Let's hear a moment from the book.
Last comes Riverdale, where I do my best not to look cool at all. No shades. And definitely no hood. I don't even like to draw, because some people might think I'm going to use my markers to tag the bus. I do everything I can to put other writers at ease, saying things like, I love quadratic equations, don't you? Works surprisingly well. It also helps the kids at school be less scared of me.
He's explaining there about code switching, as he does at each bus stop, to make the children around him more comfortable, this middle schooler named Jordan Banks. What do you see there about race and microaggressions?
Well, it's very interesting. This is a book for middle grade students, and I think there's a lot to learn. Just how Jordan, you know, takes different kinds of situations. He thinks about them. He realizes that maybe he has a way to get on the other side of it, to change how he sees it, and help his fellow students see him differently.
There's this one moment in the book when a teacher finds and reads Jordan Banks' private sketchbook, and the teacher discovers that he views her casual errors about getting his name wrong as an indication that he is insignificant. What about that moment in this book?
That is a very powerful moment. And, you know, when you it's also an audiobook, so I listened to it as well as looked at the graphic novel. But there is so much power in the teacher speaking to him and Jordan, you know, coming back and saying, but that's how it looks to me. and the pauses. That's another thing about listening to it, because, of course, it was spoken to him, and then you hear it in real time.
We're talking with Robin Witten, founder and editor of Audiophile magazine, reviewing and recommending audiobooks. You can join in. Do you have a children's audiobook you'd like to recommend? What is it called? What's it about? What makes the story special? What are your questions about suggestions for audiobooks? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Robin, the audiobook Look Both Ways, which Look Both Ways, A Tale Told in 10 Blocks. This is by Jason Reynolds, who received honorable mention by the Coretta Scott King Awards. Audiophile recommended it as one of the best audiobooks last year, and the author tells 10 stories throughout the novel. Here's a moment about some teenagers who have a tendency for theft.
They'll steal anything that jingles, even your hands if you got them tucked and they're making too much noise. Matter of fact, they'd take the pockets out of your pockets if they could. Once, they walked into a convenience store, one of the ones with the dish at the front of the counter that says, take a penny, leave a penny, and took all the pennies, leaving no pennies. A grab and get gone.
So we're seeing these glimpses of, you know, kids and their stories. What do you make of how he structured this?
Well, this is a wonderful story, because he sets it up, what we just listened to, and you're thinking, what are these kids doing? But as you listen, you learn more about these kids and why they're together, and they're actually, their common bond is that all their parents have cancer or had cancer, and why are they together? What are they doing with these pennies and the things they're taking? And it has a beautiful resolution, and that's one of the geniuses of Jason Reynolds' writing.
Yeah, these bite-sized, shorter stories, really easy to grab onto.
Absolutely. You know, maybe 25 minutes. Each one of the stories in this collection is read by a different narrator, so you have a different voice telling you sometimes a very different story, but it's all within a neighborhood. So it shows. I mean, Jason Reynolds has just been named our National Ambassador for Young People's Literature. He does a lot of school visits. He writes for younger children, for teens, and, you know, he's an amazing writer and also a speaker for different kinds of literature and connecting with children with lots of different interests.
What is his message as ambassador?
Well, I think that the diversity of literature for all students and young people, and I think one of the greatest things that adults can take away from it is when we read young people's literature, we learn a lot about how they see the world. And if you have children, then you can bring them into that with that sort of work.
I love there. He was talking with the Washington Post about going into classrooms and just opening it up, any questions the kids wish to ask him, and allowing a lot more dialogue. And he also mentioned wanting to hear more kids write about and talk about their stories in rural America. What do you make of that?
Oh, I think that's a great thing. And to have someone doing that, encouraging classrooms and teachers to take stories from all different kinds of situations. Great.
How much editorial control do authors have in the creation of their audiobooks?
Well, I think someone like Jason Reynolds is very involved with his audiobooks. He's narrated his own one of those stories in Look Both Ways. He narrates. He's narrated entire stories, books that he's written. He actually is a new book coming out called Stamped, which is a young people's adaptation of Stamped from the Beginning, which won National Book Award. And, you know, he is involved as a narrator, but I think he also in the casting. That's something that often authors will get involved in. Publishers will suggest a cast, but authors, you know, listen and decide whether they feel they're the right voice for their story.
We're talking audiobooks with Robin Witten. There's a lot of them out there, and it's a matter of tracking them down. Audiophile Magazine's Robin Witten is helping us. Do you reach for audiobooks to keep your kids happy? Do you rely on your local library for checking out selections and getting recommendations? What have you found? What audiobooks were a gateway for your child's listening? When did they want more? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll talk more with Robin Witten on kids' audiobooks right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A quick programming note here. The Senate impeachment trial of President Trump concludes this afternoon at 3 when senators will vote on the articles of impeachment. You can hear live NPR coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio's News and Classical Network and online at WPR.org. Here on the Ideas Network, we'll keep you up to date on the latest and we'll invite you into the conversation. Right now, it is kids' audiobooks and some great recommendations. Audiobooks create this shared experience. Companies are jumping into the space. One is called Pinna. It curates and creates content for preschoolers through preteens. Thousands of audiobooks available. Where do you find your children's audiobooks? Do your kids check them out from the library? What stories have they heard so far? Is it a bridge to them reading books in print? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guide is Robin Witten. She's compiled a curated list of recommended children's audiobooks, and she's founder and editor of Audiophile magazine. Robin, let us move on to Mildred D. Taylor and look at the accomplishments of this author through the decades. Her books have won numerous awards, recently won the King Lifetime Achievement Award. What is it about her work that resonates, that stays with us?
Well, I think one of the things about Mildred Taylor's stories, which start, I think, with Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, which was the 1977 Newbery Award Medal honor, winner, to her newest book, which is called All the Days Past, All the Days to Come, is that it's the story, the Logan family story, that starts really in the 40s in the South. And as the as our history changes, the family moves from the 1940s and then into the 1960s, that the children of the family have moved north. The parents are still on their land in Mississippi. But it's, you know, the transition of history and different issues around racism that persist in both the North and the South at that time, and how this family really cope with it. But in a very loving way. I mean, the family is a wonderful, loving family. They have great support from each other. And I think as a listener, to hear about the things they deal with and how they survive and thrive is really just very satisfying.
And Mildred Taylor has been writing for decades. And 40 years ago, Song of the Trees introduced us to the Logans, this family in Mississippi that's only a couple generations removed from slavery. And through her books, we wend our way to the present. You also are quite sentimental about her work. You listened to her Roll of Thunder with your son, who is now in his 30s.
That's right. And, you know, it's that shared experience that we had I could bring up today, and he'd say, oh, yeah, what a great book. And to me, it was, yes, a great book, but a great experience to have listened to it with him.
You have been writing about her most recent book, the All the Days Past, All the Days to Come, which is narrated by Allison Johnson. Can you give us a little bit of context to what are your impressions of her latest work?
Well, interesting, All the Days Past and All the Days to Come, you know, gets us into the 1960s as the children are Cassie, who is the young, you know, the main character throughout the series, is, you know, in her late teens, early 20s. She's starting on a career. She makes mistakes. We follow her along. And, you know, interestingly, Allison Johnson has recorded not only the newest All the Days Past, but she also has recorded six of the audiobooks in this series. So these family members are, you know, she knows them and she projects them so vividly.
Yeah, her voice is tied to these characters.
Indeed it is.
Let's hear a moment from the audiobook where Cassie Logan, the literary heroine, is describing their house in their neighborhood on Door Street.
The house was large, a duplex. On one side of it was a run-down ramshackle house with unpainted wooden siding blackened with age, and a huge barn in the backyard filled with rats. On the other side was a neat house, a side-by-side duplex, but smaller than ours. When we moved in, families in both those houses were white. That did not last long.
Her words remind me so staccato, so clear, clear as a bell.
Yes, and, you know, traveling with her and this family through their many changes in their lives, the people they meet, and their closeness is just something so memorable. And, you know, to honor Mildred Taylor's work in this way is, really a fantastic thing.
Robin, what age group do you think this audiobook would be suited for?
Oh, I think that middle grade students certainly. That's the audience it was written for. Some of the issues are more sophisticated, so that older teens would be interested. But I think you certainly could, as a family, be these kind of books make a great point of conversation for families. And you know, as your kids get older, it's not always easy to read what they're reading.
We're talking with Robin Witten, founder and editor of Audiophile magazine, reviewing and recommending audiobooks this hour. You can join in. There's a line for you. What was your favorite book as a child you wish would be turned into an audiobook? Perhaps it has been. Have any ideas on a narrator or actors to play certain voices? Do you listen to audiobooks? How do you fold them into your life? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Robin, let's move on to The Nickel Boys. The Alex Awards recognize The Nickel Boys. It's written by Colson Whitehead, narrated by J.D. Jackson. Here's a moment when the protagonist, Elwood, first discovers the teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Elwood received the best gift of his life on Christmas Day 1962, even if the ideas it put in his head were his undoing. Martin Luther King at Zion Hill was the only album he owned, and it never left the turntable.
So this story, based on a real-life experience of children at a former school for boys?
That's right, in Florida.
What do you hear in this audiobook?
Well, I think this is, to have us listen to a little bit of Elwood's attachment to this recording of Martin Luther King is so prophetic, because, as he says, it's his undoing, because he believes it so strongly. But against the racism and the prejudice and the violence that he experiences later in life, it doesn't really get him through. But it's a powerful book, and J.D. Jackson has such a strong and compelling voice that, you know, the voice of Colson Whitehead, really, and he takes us through this story.
So The Nickel Boys is a New York Times bestseller, been long listed for the National Book Award, mostly marketed to adults. Why do you think the audiobook version would be attractive and pertinent to teens?
Well, I think these Alex Awards that the ALA gives are all adult titles that have a particular appeal to teens. And I think, you know, this story about the racism and, you know, this piece of history is illuminated by Colson Whitehead beautifully. And, you know, the story is told extremely well by J.D. Jackson. He has it.
Does J.D. Jackson appear in other audiobooks? Have you heard his voice before?
Oh, absolutely. He's one of our most talented narrators and very versatile. So, you know, we've celebrated some of his mysteries. He's done children's books, other, you know, younger children's books. You know, he is a very astute actor who, you know, the best narrators do, they get inside the story, inside the head of the author who is telling the story and brings it alive, brings the characters of that author alive.
Does an artist like J.D. Jackson, when you hear him in other audiobooks, does his tone change? Does his delivery change?
Oh, very much so. I think, you know, he has different kinds of characters he's representing. The whole tone may be very different. You know, whatever it is whatever the tone of the author is, it's a whole new story. And he's very versatile. So sometimes you think, oh, wow, that's different. That's very different. And, you know, but very believable.
Do you have a keen eye on accents and when an accent is hitting it and when it's not?
Oh, yes. I think that's one of the things that listeners certainly are often tuned to. And, you know, they have to, even if you might not, if you're listening to something set in a foreign country, you might not actually know how authentic the accent is. But if it's believable to you within the story, you know, that's a good thing. You don't have to, you know, you can enjoy it because you sort of don't notice it. I think that's part of it. If you're noticing an accent all the time, then that's not a good thing.
Talking with Audiophile magazine founder Robin Witten for our guide to children's audiobooks. Audiobooks allow people to hear fluent reading, and especially for emerging readers, they hear what reading can sound like. Have audiobooks been a bridge to paper books for your young reader? What did that look like? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in the world of children's audiobooks. Last fall, Audible released an original of Jessica Corey's middle grade book called The Mistwick School of Music Craft. We're hearing the music that was performed by the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra youth orchestras for this audiobook. Librarians, how often do you see teens and kids check out audiobooks? What are some of the most popular ones? 800-642-1234. Robin Witten is our guide. She's founder and editor of Audiophile magazine. Robin, we're hearing this music created specifically for an audiobook. Talk to us about what goes into creating the soundscapes.
Well, there's quite a lot. I mean, when you think about the New Jersey Youth Orchestra composing this music and then recording it and having it inserted into the story, that's quite a lot of steps, but it's one of the exciting pieces of original audio that's happening these days. Sometimes the sound effects are done with Foley sound, you know, the created sound that was originally developed for old-time radio. Sometimes it's live sound that actually has been recorded outside or in a certain environment. And it's all layered in into a soundscape that, you know, may take the place of words, or it may change, be a transition between scenes. It's used in different ways.
Laura from Fontana emailed in to say that they've been Audible subscribers for at least 15 years. Laura's youngest daughter is visually impaired, legally blind, and audiobooks are a major part of her life. The audiobook got her through many classes, and she graduated in the top five of her high school and was a National Merit Scholar finalist. Wow. What do you make of that story, Robin?
Oh, that's a wonderful story. And, to have audiobooks have taken such a great role in her education to help her, achieve her potential. Very exciting.
I want to pick your brain here for a moment. Harry Potter, what's going on here? Books in the Harry Potter series, they take the seven top spots for bestsellers on Audible. What is the staying power there?
Well, I mean, you have the amazing Jim Dale, who is the narrator of all of the Harry Potter books, and, you know, he creates character voices. He created character voices for every single character, and he's a brilliant storyteller who sustained it through seven novels. It's really amazing, and he delights listeners, and, it doesn't get old.
So the audiobook draws you in, and then you just devour one after the other.
I think that's right, and that's what happens with a series. You know, those people all have a great character, and you want to hear them again.
How much of a parent and child enjoying an audiobook together, how much of this is a bonding relationship experience in addition to a learning one?
Oh, I think it is. I mean, we often think about reading to very small children before they can read. It's a great ritual that so many families have. And, you know, to be able to continue that as your children get older and, you know, you're experiencing the story together in a very rich way. And you know, for when you're listening with older kids and teens, makes a great point of conversation, which isn't always easy to find.
All right, Robin, so what are you listening to right now today?
Well, I was doing a lot of catching up with some of the award winners, and because we review so many audiobooks, I have enjoyed Song for a Whale, which was also one of the award winners, about a girl who is deaf, and she uses sign language, and again trying to how she fits in to her community. It's a lovely story.
Robin, thank you for joining us.
It's been great, Kate. Thank you.
Robin Witten is founder and editor of Audiophile Magazine, which reviews and recommends audiobooks. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with an icy story.
Ice is a natural resource, and this time of year, Wisconsin is rich in it. In the 1800s, before refrigeration, the ice trade was a big business. Today, a Central Wisconsin Historical Society keeps alive the tradition of ice harvesting. Rob Menser brings us their story.
In 1911, the Milwaukee-area manufacturer Alonzo Pauling founded the Pewaukee Lake Ice Company. They got to work building one of Wisconsin's largest ice houses. It could hold about 35,000 tons of ice. This was state-of-the-art 20th century ice harvesting. But it didn't last. By the 1920s, the breweries that did stay in business during Prohibition could make their own ice. A decade later, the vacant ice house collapsed. But the business of harvesting ice didn't completely disappear.
How many inches you got over there?
How many inches of ice we got? 14?
At Nepco Lake in central Wisconsin on this January morning, the local Lions Club is having an ice fishing competition. The ice is dotted with tents and shanties. There's music and announcements on the PA. And this is where, every year, Mike Hittner and other volunteers with Historic Point Boss do an ice harvesting demonstration.
This is a labor of love. We want to get the feeling of the sore muscles that they must have felt and bring back something that was done years and years ago.
The volunteers saw the ice by hand and store it in an ice house without any artificial cooling, just the way Wisconsinites in the 19th century would have done.
Before the turn of the century into the early 1920s, this was a way that people got their ice because it was the only way to store things for the long term other than smoking it or salting it or something like that.
Janet Heister came out to watch the demonstration. She's thinking about the farmers and other workers who used to do this every winter in Wisconsin.
I admire their work ethic. I mean, geez, they could have been sitting by the fireplace and just, you know, but no, no.
So cut through the heart, cold and clear, strike for love.
The saws that cut through the ice are more than 6 feet tall. They're three times thicker than a woodcutting saw, and the teeth are set farther apart. The volunteers cut massive 60-pound blocks and use sharp tongs to drag them out of the water. You've seen this process if you've watched the opening song in the Disney movie Frozen.
There you go. Ooh,
beautiful, powerful, dangerous.
Oh, ice has a magic and we control. Stronger than one, stronger than 10, stronger than 100 men.
The ice trade went all over the world, and it changed people's lives in all sorts of ways. By the mid-1800s, most middle-class homes could not only preserve meat with this ice, but now they could also make their own ice cream at home. Don Matthews, the president of Historic Point Boss, says that technology still has its appeal.
What's really neat is children during festivals. We have them crank the ice cream maker, and we have them chop the ice, and they're just really enthralled with this ice.
What are you guys going to do with the ice?
Put it in our ice house, Dr. Wakeley.
The Historic Point Boss Ice House is a couple of miles away from Nepco Lake. Today, the volunteers drive rather than taking horse-drawn sleds.
Harvesting ice and keeping things cold has been going longer than refrigeration, so sometimes we got to keep some of those tried-and-true low-tech methods operating.
Tony Whitefeather farms at Whitefeather Organics in Custer, Wisconsin. He was volunteering with the ice harvest, but he says it's not just history for him. He's taking some of the blocks home with him.
For us on our farm, Whitefeather, we have put it in our walk-in cooler, and it saved us a couple months of electric bills.
The volunteers stack the blocks and cover them over with sawdust. They'll fill the whole room with sawdust for insulation, and there the ice will stay. They'll be making ice cream with it this summer.
WPR's Rob Menser brought us that story of ice harvesting on Wood County's Nepco Lake. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.